I'm curious, what are some of the disadvantages that you maybe saw at the time? Because now, potentially, they could be seen as advantages. You know, a small market can also be not a lot of competition or whatnot. But I'm curious, at that time, what were you thinking of in terms of being the disadvantages that you were originally kind of running away from?
Yeah, so probably it would be the entrepreneurial scene. Because, you know, Italy has always been having, you know, this fragmented business scene, right? So starting a business without having, you know, a safe place to go for advice or having a network that you can rely upon, it's harder in Italy. It's harder to have that kind of network if you don't know the right people. Let's put it this way. Mm-hmm. It's easier to build that in countries like the US or Germany or France, because there's a lot more investment and there are many people who are doing the same thing as you are. So it's easier to you know, build a network of fellow entrepreneurs, people that have done what you're doing in the past. And when it comes to Italy, I would say it was harder than it is today. But we still need to do some catch up to change this. So definitely one of the disadvantages was that, although, and I was surprised at that time, this is interesting, because it was an aspect that I could not convince myself of, because we're really entrepreneurial. Like, every Italian is born entrepreneurial, I would say. Yet we were still missing a lot of entrepreneurial ventures, probably formal ventures. Because if you meet Italians, probably many people, although they're full-time employees somewhere else, they have something going on in their life. I don't know, maybe even buying something at a lower price to sell it at a higher price informally, or, you know, doing some intermediation between two parties. So we're very entrepreneurial, but yet we probably miss the formal part, and even the awareness that things are possible. Because that's what I was angry about, that when I was in school, you know, the school system and the teacher always made you believe that things are this way and they will be this way because we've always done things in that way and nothing much is going to change.
Hey, everybody, what is going on? Welcome to the GMI Rocket Show. I'm your host, Roman Zelichenko. I am a former immigration lawyer turned entrepreneur. I'm the founder of Laborless, which automates H-1B visa compliance, and also the founder of GMI Rocket, which, of course, brings you the show and is a digital marketing agency for the immigration and global mobility space. I'm super excited today. We have a guest that's coming to us all the way from Sweden. It's late there because right now it's 4 o'clock in the live recording in NYC. So I'm really always appreciate it when folks come and join from later time zones. You know, she should probably be sleeping, but instead they're talking to us. And so I'm always very grateful. So our guest today is Annalie Guzman Molina, who is the CEO and co-founder of Emigrate. Emigrate is an immigration tech company that is building basically a workflow and technology for Sweden-bound immigration, or at least that's where they're starting. You know, the idea, we're going to talk about how this company and the idea came about. But of course, the idea is to bring transparency to the immigration process and arm immigrants and, of course, employers, too, who want to hire foreign nationals with the information and the processes and tools that they need to come to Sweden. So very excited for this conversation. And without further ado, Annalie, thank you so much for being here and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Roman. I'm very happy to be here as well. And don't worry about the time. I like this time zone.
I'm a night owl too. So like my best hours are between, I mean, on a really crazy night, between 8 o'clock in the evening and maybe 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Everybody's asleep and that's when you can sort of concentrate.
I agree as well, because then you don't have the noise of people around you and you get more productive. So I do think it's a great time.
And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, why don't you just wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning? But in my head, I'm always thinking, okay, well, everyone else is going to wake up in 2 hours. So I only really have 2 hours of time. But if it's in the middle of the night, you know that people are going to be sleeping for another 5-6 hours. So anyway, that's a whole nother conversation. Before we jump into it, for folks who are watching, as always, please tell us who you are, shout yourself out, tell us where you're watching from. I'm really hoping to see folks from all parts of the world. That's always really fun. And of course, ask questions of Annalie, ask questions of myself, just give your comments and your feedback. I'll always bring them up. And I love having this live conversation for that reason. So anyways, drop a comment. And obviously, give our video a like if you're watching it live. So Annalie, you know, we connected a little while ago. I've actually known your company for a number of months, but of course it was really awesome to chat with you kind of recently and learn about everything you're doing. I always find it really cool because, you know, I'm a US immigration attorney. I always think about immigration first from a US side and then like a global side, but that's just because that's my blinders, right? Of course, there's an entire world and a lot of different countries are really building a lot of cool stuff from the immigration space. I mean, we've had folks on the show from Canada, from Germany, from Australia. So there's just so much happening around the world and it's really exciting. I'm really curious to hear about, of course, your story and your journey and how you came to build Emigrate. And of course, what your thoughts are for something like Sweden, right? Because let's say in comparison to a population, you know, the size of the US or, you know, a bunch of other really large countries, obviously, Sweden has a slightly smaller population. And so the question is always like, okay, when do you build tech for an immigration process that has, you know, however many, you know, people coming into the country? So I'm definitely interested to dive into that. But before we do, as always, I really love to learn about your story, right? Like, how did you come to where you are now? So you are originally, you're born in the Dominican Republic, right?
Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about that?
Of course. I was born in Dominican Republic. My first time, let's say, living abroad, it was when I was 15 years old. I went abroad in an exchange program called AFS. And my mom realized that I was 15 years old after I have left, you know? She was like, what have I done? I sent my daughter to USA for a year to a strange family. And she's only 15. It was very unpopular or, let's say, unique in Dominican Republic to be doing those kind of exchange. But I always was curious about that exchange student in my school. So I think that was my first experience moving abroad. And because it was such early age, I got to actually like experience what is to be like aware of different cultures and what it is to even live with another family or how we are different, but at the same time, we have things that are together. So I think that was my first immigration, if we can say it that way. And then after that, I went back to Dominican Republic. I did my bachelor's degree in architecture, and we can dive in a little bit more about that. And of course, in that process, I traveled more, a lot in Latin American countries and also, for example, I went to Norway, and that's how I met the Nordics. And after I finished my degree, I lived in Dominican Republic for a while, worked as an architect, realized that architecture was not really what I would like to continue doing. And I actually moved back to USA, actually to work there.
Wow.
So, yes, I was living in Lake Tahoe, which is a wonderful place to live. It's in North California. I think that a lot of people know about it. And I lived there for a year and a half with a work visa. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I moved to Sweden to do my master's degree.
Wow. So I'm curious, you know, when you went abroad and you were 15 years old, I mean, when I was 15, I was probably playing video games and skateboarding outside. I mean, I never even knew this was possible, the idea of living somewhere and living with a new family, experiencing a different culture. How did you come up with, like, did your parents, did your school tell you about this? How did that happen?
There was people. I remember that I was in the eighth grade and there were people coming to my school. And I have been in that school since I was 5 years old. Mm-hmm. So I have never moved from another school. And it was always like the same group amount of people. And I will see people coming as an exchange and I got very curious. And I investigated everything. My mom say that I always only give her the paper and she had to sign and pay. But I did all the investigation. And then when I was doing my freshman year, then we have exchange student coming to our family. And her name is Anne-Marie and she's from Germany. And that was like our sister. So she had her experience in our family and that was wonderful. And then the next year, Anne-Marie's left, and I also left to USA. So that's actually how the process went. But it was a very nice experience. Like from day one, we went to a camp where you get like trained and there is a selection round. So it was, in that moment, I saw it as an adventure. Mm-hmm. And now I look back in a different way. But what people tell me is that before that, I was very like under my mom's arms, you know, like I was a child. And I think that I remember that when I moved abroad, one of my first thoughts was like, I could be whoever I wanted to be. And that was like a big change because, you know, sometimes when you live in the same country, you have these kind of like norms and prejudices that are in the society that you mold yourself in and you do the same things. But then when you do these movements, you actually get to experience yourself in another level. And one of the things that I learned the most was how to be responsible about money at a very early age. If I give you like a small story, my mom gave me allowance every month. And we agreed on that allowance before I left the country. And I remember I spent the whole allowance of 1 month in 1 week. And then when I asked her, she was like, no, we agree that that was your allowance. So you have to like make up with this allowance until next month. And it's actually how life was. It was like a life lesson when you're 15. So I'm actually grateful of what my mom did to me. But it's also, it was, I saw it as an adventure. And I think that that's where it piqued my interest. And it also shaped me a lot to who I am today.
That's super cool. I really admire you for doing that. And I think it's, you mature a lot when you travel, and a lot of people wait. Like, I feel like a lot of people would benefit more from traveling earlier. Super, super cool. So you came, you know, you did that. You were 15 for about a year. You came back to the Dominican Republic to finish, mm-hmm. I'm assuming, high school. And yeah. Then you went to college there too, yes. Study architecture. So then, and so you said that's when you had this foreign student come from Germany. And then you, it sounds like you went back to the U.S. during your college as an exchange student as well?
No. Okay. I finished my college education in Dominican Republic. Yeah. It was 5 years.
Right.
And I just want to say that my family is, my mom and my uncle, they are architects as well. But Dominican Republic, if you are an independent contractor, you get to do the whole building. So from ideation to finish. Mm-hmm. So when it was my turn to be an architect, that was my expectations. And then, you know, also in school, you are very free to do and design whatever you want. And when it's reality, architecture is a little bit more tough. It's like, it was like a reality check. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was like, okay, I am very thankful what architecture taught me in the sense of creativity or design thinking. It's very like close to design thinking and user experience. But then I begin realizing that I'm more of a project manager than I am an architect. So that's when I began shifting towards that. And it was when I finished my degree that I decided to move to USA for a work that my host family before have just kind of like helped me get in Lake Tahoe.
Oh, wow.
Because I was also my first year, I used to live in Grass Valley, so it was quite close to Lake Tahoe as well.
So you did work as an architect in the DR for after you graduated?
Yes.
Yeah.
1 year.
1 year. And then that's when you realized, okay, this is not exactly what I thought it would be, mm-hmm. or something. I mean, had the same story. I worked as a lawyer for just under 2 years, and it was the same idea. You know, you go into school, you have all these ideas of what it's going to be like. And then, of course, you get to work. And sometimes it's not exactly what you would expect, or it is what you expect, but you realize you like doing it less than you thought. And maybe you're better at something else, or you naturally tend towards something else. So it's all a learning experience, I guess, in life. So you said that you worked as an architect, you realized that maybe your passion was somewhere else, and then you came to the US. What did you, first of all, how did you come to the US? And then sort of, you mentioned something with your host family that helped you get a job. Were you doing anything architecture related?
Yes, I was doing more property management. Mm-hmm. So I was working with the Ritz-Carlton in Grass Valley with property management. So that's what I started doing when I arrived there. And then, of course, that work was very little to was accustomed to in the amount of work. So I got myself involved in everything. And I started doing all different types of jobs. Like I was bartendering, I was babysitting simultaneously, right? Because I had to do that job because that was my work permit work.
Right.
And it was interesting experience because it was also as well about adapting to people, and it was also about a different kind of environment. I do realize that it's very easy in USA to work more. Work a lot more than the normal hours because it's quite competitive and it's quite easy to get involved and in that environment. So I also was like doing a lot of entrepreneurship in a smaller scale, not more of a SMEs than a startups. I only did the startups, I will say, 3 years ago when I started to shift into tech.
Interesting. So let's get to that. You know, you did this work in the US for a little while, which is cool because then you got to see the US as when you were 15, you get to see it in your early 20s.
And completely then it's different.
Yeah, completely different. And then of course now you have a little bit of money because you're working. And so, you know, maybe your mom's allowance, you could get a little bit more than that.
No, I didn't get allowance the second time. Right, of course.
And so I guess at this point you decided that you want to move to Sweden. And you went there for graduate school. You know, how did that happen? Why Sweden, I guess?
I actually was going towards architecture engineering first. That was my thoughts into how I was going to change. And when I did that, I started researching. And the programs in that moment, we're talking about, I started researching 7 years ago. So in that time, it was more about you can go to Sweden, Germany, Japan, or Canada. Those were my options. And I had experience with the Nordics when I went to Norway. I think that I remember I was 21 years old going to Norway in summer. And I don't know if you heard all the like talks about Nordic countries in summer. They are amazing because you have long days. I think that it will happen the same also in Canada and in Alaska. So you have long days and good weather and we will go out and everything was so organized. You know, I was like so impressed, even as an architect, I was like, everything is working flawlessly. Like they are buses, they are like boats. And, you know, I have been in a big cities in USA, like New York and Miami, but, and also like in California and San Francisco, but I saw Norway and it was like a dream, right? So I started researching where I wanted to go. And Sweden was very connected to my values. I was looking into, it's very true what people say. They talk about equality, about sustainability, work-life balance. Those kind of things like got me interested in Sweden. And I started applying. And actually, I found a program that was called International Project Management in Chalmers, and I applied and I got accepted actually my second time because the first time that I applied, I had not graduated yet. So the second time was when after I was in USA and I got in the program and they offered me a scholarship.
Nice.
So I think that that made everything also easier. You know, there was not so much thinking about what I was going to do. So it was more like they got me like a full ride and I was like, okay, here I'm going. And I started planning my move to Sweden.
Wow, that's really incredible. It's so cool too, because I've been to Sweden. I've been to Norway just for a little bit. And you're right. I mean, it's just so clean and perfect, beautiful. And everybody's really nice. And I mean, obviously, every country has its pluses and minuses, but I can definitely imagine how that is just, you know, it's easy to fall in love with that and want to go. Sorry?
No. I just want to say, and the assumption, because that was summer. And also when I moved was when we was starting the winter. And I was coming from Lake Tahoe that year didn't have so much snow, but there is a snow. So I was like, okay, I'm moving to the north. So there's going to be also snow. And actually, here where I live in Gothenburg, there is not so much snow and there is a lot of darkness.
Right.
So the darkness is the downside. I think that a lot of people will talk to you about this part as well. So,
yeah, the long days have the opposite short nights, right, during the wintertime.
Yeah.
That's cool. I want to just take a small break and just get some comments in here. So Marianne, watching from San Francisco. Hey, Marianne, how are you? Marianne asked, where in the U.S. was your AFS experience? But I think you mentioned it was in Lake Tahoe. So
it was in Grass Valley. So it was like an hour from Lake Tahoe and Sacramento.
Got it.
So it was in that area.
That's cool. You know, I've never been there. I've been to California a bunch of times, but I've always wanted to go to Lake Tahoe. And Marianne noted here, it's beautiful, but right now just crazy fires and people are getting evacuated. So it's really kind of sad and I guess scary in a way to think about all the fires on the West Coast, all the way up and down the coast. You know, to your point about sustainability in Sweden, the Nordic countries really do lead the way in many ways of kind of building sustainability into the way they're structured their cities and their lives, what they use on a daily basis. So hopefully, you know, we can all learn from that too. And, you know, but that's a different podcast.
We can talk a little bit later on about it because it's very different.
It's very different. Yeah, that was my experience too. So Anneli, you know, at this point, you've got accepted into Chalmers. You're in, you know, you're in the school, you're studying international project management. Where does the tech space come in? Like, how do you start? I understand that it's a technology college, I guess, right? So, or university. So it's kind of focused on technology, but that doesn't mean everything is about technology. So where did you start diving into the tech space? I kind of want to get a little understanding about that. And then of course, you know, we can start talking about, and I'd really love to hear about, okay, how did all of this come together for this idea of, you know, emigrate and really build something from a technology space for immigration? But before that, how did you get into the tech scene? Because you were more in the architecture side of things before.
So when I started going to Chalmers, because I was changing degrees, it was more about international project management. So we begin thinking about project psychology and how international project works and working with people from different places of the world. So it was a very interesting program, but it also gave me the flexibility of taking like flexible courses. So I started to think about, for example, design thinking. I took that course. It was called design. So I was like, oh, maybe this is a little bit related, but not too much. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started like going into understanding more about how you can impact people with tech. And it got me curious. But I will say that I finished my degree. I did my projects a lot more into sustainability and how to manage stakeholders for sustainability. And then when I finished my degrees, I started working as a project manager. And if I go into how we come into tech and how it comes into emigrate, I remember that I had a friend called Anam, and she was also, let's say she was in my same program called International Project Management, but she had more of an IT background, and she was, we were in the same kind of like student organizations, and she began doing organizing hackathons. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning, I didn't have any clue of what a hackathon was, right? So I was like very naive in the whole aspect. I only knew about people doing a startup because there is a lot of programs in Sweden and a lot of like transitioning towards being a student and having ideas towards starting a business as a startup. So they were like camps and so on. And coming back to Anam and the hackathons, she actually invited me one day to organize one because I love to organize events. So I started organizing a hackathon. And before organizing it, she said, you should participate in one. And we went to another city, maybe 4.5 hours away with train from here called Gävle. And it was the first time I've had experience with a hackathon. And this is me who I know about design thinking, but I don't know how to create anything tech, right? I only used to do my prototypes were done in PowerPoint with hyperlinks. So we go to Gävle, and then it was a very interesting way to do a hackathon because it was with the municipality, and there was also like companies, and they will give us challenges and we will pick, and we have actually 48 hours to create, actually 24 hours. That was hackathon was 24 hours to create a solution. And we did get a jury's mention, but we didn't create something tech, which was really interesting because the user was old people. And most of the people come up with solutions based on apps. And our solution was actually to do a TV show. Mm. And the jury was so impressed by that because they actually say that at the end, we, of course, this could be enabled by tech, but this was very thoughtful to the people who were actually going to be the receiver to them. Like the older people watch more TV that we do nowadays. We watch TV in Netflix or in Hulu and all these ones that are now HBO and so on. So I started getting myself into hackathons and picked my interest. I also did organize Open Hacks, that is nonprofits. So we do open source and so on. And then into that, I began realizing about the impact that tech has to be able to create change. And then what happened with Emigre, I think that everything in my life led to that, because I'm going to tell you a little bit later how I met my co-founder. But he actually piqued the interest because of when I left my job to be an entrepreneur, I was doing property management again as a SMEs. And in that process, I realized that I did a mistake in my immigration process, which it was I picked insurance that was not supposed to. I was paying two different insurances, and one of them, it was something that was differently. So I should have paid the unemployment insurance, and I was paying just like a new union. So I spent like 3 years paying $50 for nothing at the end, because when I got unemployed, I could not use it. So that kind of raised the conversation of what it was the problem, right? Like, how do I didn't know that? Because I have been helping students with these questions, right? So I have been, before I start working my university time, I was part of this committee that was called Chalmers International Reception Committee. And during 2 years, we were helping students come into Chalmers and welcoming them into Chalmers. So I was doing immigration, let's say relocation company work, but for students. Mm. And it was fun as well, because it was like organizing activities and so on. So I felt like I was a fraud, because I was helping other people with their problems, telling them what to do. And then I did a mistake myself. Classic, no? So when we started questioning, make the question out of that, it was actually with a lot of unemployed people. We were having a group just to like discuss about the hardness of finding a new job as an immigrant. They were all immigrants as well. And I was like, yeah, why we don't have something that is just like called Emigrate? And the name came out there. It was in December 2019, where it was like, that just tells you like, what things you're supposed to do, and it's accessible, and it's not like you against Google trying to find everything in the internet. Mm-hmm. So that's how Emigre started.
That's so, you know, it still comes from your own personal experience, right? It's this idea of, I mean, for you, you were helping students sort of ease into their new world or their new life, even if it's temporary as a student. And that's, like you said, you're kind of a destination services provider, like a relocation company. And I can only imagine if you come home and you realize that there was some error on your immigration, it's like, well, don't tell anybody. You can't have anybody know, right? And of course, mistakes happen, right? It's not one of these things where it's actually that, you know, everyone makes, even professionals make mistakes. But it's interesting that sparked your idea of thinking like, why did this happen? I'm supposed to be the expert. If I didn't know this and I know what I'm talking about, how many other people are making mistakes if they're doing this themselves? What mistakes are they making, bigger mistakes than me? Okay, you didn't get unemployment. That sucks. But what if someone did something that had made them leave the country, you know, or something worse. So I love that. And I feel like this idea of solving a problem that you had is it's a powerful motivator for actually getting the job done, right?
And actually, Sweden in that moment, when we started researching, was facing a lot of what is called competence utbildning. It's a new word, actually, that they added in the dictionary. It means like kicking out a highly qualified labor competence. Kicking out with business. So basically, it was because they were implementing rules into Sweden to protect the labor, like that people don't get paid on first salaries, that they get the right insurances. But the problem is that this information was not given, not all the companies had that information. So a lot of people were getting kicked out after they have been living in Sweden for more than 2 or 4 years. Just because mistakes of like they got paid 1 month less than they were supposed to, or because they actually missed one in insurance, or they didn't take enough vacation days. So those were like the three main reasons where people were getting actually kicked out of the country. And there was a lot of like advertising going on about it, because it was, besides being unfair, it actually was like bad for the immigrant. Of course, the companies, they lose the competence and they lose the person, which is also unfair. But also the immigrant is the one who had to leave without any way to appeal those decisions, because that was the law. So I think that that also fueled, because it was not only that, also my co-founder, he was part of this committee like years before I was. So he was like my senior in this committee, and this is how we met, right? So when I started thinking about immigrate, I went to this committee and I was like, these are the people who work like me, who felt like this. So I'm going to try to find people there. He had a similar experience. He was like almost tried to get kicked out 7 times from Sweden, until now he is a citizen. He tells everybody like, try to kick me out. No, you cannot. I remember listening to one of your podcasts saying that actually, until you don't get a citizenship, you also always have that in the back of your head. You know, it's like this kind of like worries, or it, and it makes you feel like a second class citizen, because you know, you are still not there. You are in the limbo. And sometimes, like I have been in Sweden now 6 years, and when you have been in a country this long, now you feel a local in this country. Like I feel a local in Gothenburg, not in Dominican Republic. So, yeah.
What was this committee?
It's called a Chalmers International Reception Committee.
Oh, right. Okay. That's where you were helping new students come in, and got it. Yeah. Okay. So your co-founder, Abhilash, was already working, or like he was part of the committee before.
Yeah, he was part of the committee 2010, 2011. And I was part of the committee 2016, 2017.
Got it.
So the whole 2 years. Yeah.
That's super cool. Can you talk at this point? So we kind of understand sort of where this came from, right? This idea that you made a mistake. It thankfully wasn't a fatal mistake to your immigration, you know, application, but it was something that made you pause and say, wow, if I made this mistake, how tough is it to really get this thing right? And then, of course, it sounds like you're already working with technology people. You're realizing the impact that technology can have in all different sectors. So what made you think that this should be an app? Because you could have become an advisor. You could have become an immigration lawyer. There's a lot of different ways to solve the problem. So I'm curious, like, how did you steer that in direction of this should be a technology solution?
I think that it was when the question started being accessibility problem as well. So if we think about what the problem is, it's a knowledge problem. So it's talking about data that normally some people might have it, and then you are the expert, but then it's not accessible to the other people. Or sometimes it's like you have to research a lot of time to understand what applies to you, what doesn't apply to you, you know? So when we start seeing like that as the problem, we understand that technology is the one who will enable to make it more efficient and more accessible. And that's why we turn it into an application instead. From the beginning, it was thought as an application, because a lot of people say, yeah, but that's already solved with relocation or with immigration lawyers. I was like, yeah, but actually in Sweden, if I go now in the problem in Sweden, 1 out of 5 people are foreign born. So that's a lot. If we say that 20% of the population actually is not born in Sweden. So there is Sweden is a country that has received a lot of immigrants along their journey, since refugees from the 70s from Chile and Persians, and then in the 90s a lot of like ex-Yugoslavia, and then we also have people from Afghanistan, people from Somalia, so now with the Syrians as well, Venezuelan. So there is a lot of the culture also to taking refugees. So then the immigration is very core and is very part of the country. And the country itself, I will say, is quite advanced in the process. Like if you, of course, it doesn't have the same as Canada system. Canada is another level with the points and so on, but they have digitalized a lot. So we wanted to understand if this is already digitalized and you can actually do the applications online, what is the problem with it? You know, like we really want to understand the problem. We spent a lot of time trying to understand the problem, because we were seeing this as a hobby. We didn't see this as a company. We were like doing this on the side project, right? like just having fun, having some collaborators around. Everybody was like helping in, different people from different backgrounds. We were just like discussing and researching. And the fun thing about it was that we had a discussion with the government. And I think that that's something that I appreciate to be able to have in Sweden. That I think that will be harder in other countries. And it was because there was a group called Essenberga that was doing a research about also what was the problem. And the funny thing was that we actually present our findings about our insights about that you do a safari, that you have to go to different places, that the person don't know what questions to ask. For example, if I tell you a really quick example, it's like, if you come from a country that doesn't use insurances, how do you gonna Google how to get an insurance in Sweden? You understand? Because it doesn't come to your head. You don't use insurances in your country. So you really don't know what to Google. So all those kind of things that we were finding as insights of our investigation, then we presented to the government and they present their own findings in a project with the European Union, and they actually find out similar findings. So it was actually like, it's something that it has been understood. The difference is that they have decided to go a different way that is like the same way that it have been done, that is like blogs or like you go through the websites and find out the information yourself. And we are trying to do it differently. We are trying to go more into personalization. And all this is now can be done because of technology. Technology have enabled smart contracts, forms. We can also like decide like based on your like profile that you are creating, you can start getting feedbacks of what you need or what you should do as an advisor, but also as an assistant. That's how we are creating Emigrate.
So it's kind of this platform that allows you to, and because it's an immigration context, I imagine it's something like, here's the country I'm from, here's the citizenship I have, here's the type of visa or whatever in Sweden that I'm looking for. You hit a button and then it gives you a list of everything you need, requirements, what documents you should be thinking about. Maybe like you said, insurance down the road, you know, some things that is that sort of how it is? It's almost like a...
So it's a journey. I think that everybody as an starter will tell you, you have to start somewhere and you have to interact with somewhere. There is a vision that is what it will come. Mm-hmm. We would like that people can do it through the through the program as well. And it's because for a long time, we want people to do it their own, right? We wanted to have people like have the instructions and for them to do it themselves. But more and more we have been finding is that people do prefer to have it done as simple as possible. They want to do the minimum amount of work, mm-hmm. you know? And that is now, is possible with technology, but it takes more time to develop each part of it. So we are studying more of the milestones of visas and permits. And the funny thing about this, I just going to tell that when we started, we thought that we were unique. Okay. We were like, we don't know any other company doing this in the whole world. And then when we started researching, we were like, okay, we found other companies. We found companies like Simple Citizen, Boundless, Visto, companies that you have had, but also, for example, companies like Localize and Jobatical in Europe. So it was actually like very exciting to see that this is something that is coming up and is something that has value to people. The thing that we see more as a differentiation is that we want to make this also accessible for B2C, because a lot of the companies thinks I'm going to sell to the companies, right? The companies is who make the business. As a startup, you know, that's what the VCs want to hear. Mm-hmm. But also it's a constant fight as a, for us to sometimes go like, who is the one who really needs it and who is the one who can afford it, right. Let's say. But basically what we want is that people can do in the startup all their processes and have just partnerships that can be service providers where they just can pick and based on the data, it gets done automatically.
So you're starting off with like a little bit more of a marketplace type of thing, or sort of getting people to create a profile. I guess, can you walk us through, you know, what it looks like? I know it's early days and there's going to be a lot of growth and a lot of new directions, but I'm just curious to see where you're starting off now so that people have an idea of what they can, you know, if they reach out to you or they go check out the company, what they might find.
Yeah. So right now we are still working a lot as consultants, if we say that way, because as things are being built, it's better to just connect people and then refer. So for example, like we are creating a database of immigration lawyers where people can access to them if they wanted to do it with an immigration lawyer. We cannot take away if you decide to do it with an immigration lawyer. We just want to enable you, right? So basically, at this moment, we're doing visas and permits in Sweden, and especially those for work permits and family reunification. Mm-hmm. That's where we are right now. And then we have our MVP release. It will be in October, at the end of October, hopefully. So that's why a little bit hesitant. Yeah. No, not so much. But basically, I think that it's better to share and then that we can collaborate. But basically, we are starting there with this part of people can do the tasks with the software and it can communicate to a super admin about it. And then later on down the road, what we would like to do is start adding milestones. That is like a milestone could be your identity card. And then, for example, like another milestone could be getting your health system, how to sign up in your health system, and things along the way. So we have a map or a roadmap or where we want to build. And then, of course, as any startup, we would like to go outside Sweden at some point. But what I see as well, and something that I am thankful to be here and I want to share, is that I am very open for having collaborations, because to do these kind of things, it works a lot with APIs, right? And how to connect one place to the other, how to build the system around it, or who is doing this in other places. So I am the person who always thinks that about the game theory, you know, if we both say yes, we both win, and we actually can connect this and build this platform faster together, instead of me trying to compete in a new market. So that's why, like, that's my call today, I will say. My call will be more like trying to approach us for service providers as well, companies who are maybe in a process of maybe they are not being served at the moment because they are too small, right? That they need support with, like, their employees. And I say that because going back to the accessibility that we talked before, if we think about a big company can hire a relocation or an immigration lawyer to do this process, but a company that is a startup might not be, and then they decide not to hire the immigrant, even if the immigrant has the skills, just because they need to do this process that is unknown to them. Mm-hmm. So if we take away this barrier, then that means that we are going to be able to move to a more globalized world, because we are doing something that we are taking the barrier. We are enabling the companies to hire along the way, and we actually are onboarding for countries. So it's not only the permit and the visa. It's like, how do you actually get to be here in the bureaucratic part, right? So, yeah.
That's really cool. You're preaching to the choir here in terms of me and in terms of the audience. Collaboration is a must. I mean, in a way, I was thinking about the idea of Sweden only, you know, even the US. I mean, it's a really big market. I agree. You know, we have a big population, but if you ask some people, you know, the market for immigration technology, it's not hundreds of billions of dollars, you know. And it's not that this is all about money, but the reality is that if the market isn't big enough, there's not as much incentive to continue to innovate and to invest more into building something great, you know? And so what happens? People have good ideas, but they're like, you know, I don't want to quit my job to do that because that thing is never going to give me a livelihood. So I'm not going to do it. So I think there needs to be a light at the end of the tunnel, and I think collaboration allows that light to be bigger and brighter and allows for more people, I think, to go for it. So I totally agree with you. I also think that API, you know, capabilities are something that the immigration technology space lacks a little bit right now. And I think that it's really great to have these conversations and to show the value of it. Because the more you talk about it, the more I talk about it, the more we, you know, put it out into the world, the more companies will say, okay, like, we'll try it, we'll fit. And then And then, of course, you know, then it's like Sweden, you can talk to Canada, and then you could talk to Germany and the US and whatever, and build a whole global ecosystem of immigration tech, which is, of course, the dream. I'm curious on, you know, right now, I guess you mentioned that you partner with, or you don't partner with, but it sounds like if somebody needs to have or wants to use a lawyer or relocation service provider, do you connect clients with them through your, through the Emigrate app? And is it, you know, do you go to them or do you say like they're always part of the ecosystem? Meaning if someone comes into Emigrate, are they always being helped by a lawyer or are there some things that the platform can do for them on its own? And if they want to get additional help or questions, then they go to the lawyer.
Exactly. It's more of they can do the process with the system. And we are doing it in-house at the moment, the reviews and so on. But then basically is if they would like that service, they can add the service. Mm-hmm. And if you think about what happens with a lot of also immigration tech is that because it's a case management as well, then the lawyer works more efficient as well because everything is already there and they understand where they are in the process. So that's how we connect with the lawyers if it's something that the user or the client wants.
So for an immigration lawyer in Sweden, if they're helping a client through Emigrate, they get to use the platform too, kind of as a case management tool. Is that sort of what you're saying?
That's where it's going. It's not there yet.
No, that's awesome. You know, because I'd be curious. I mean, you know, maybe this is something that the lawyers just would want for themselves. I mean, you can provide this service and this help on a B2C scale when you're talking about, you know, just providing tech to immigrants or potential immigrants. At the same time, if the technology is robust, you can turn around to lawyers and say, look, we can help you run your practice better, right? This platform is specifically made for, you know, the Sweden immigration.
So and not only lawyers, but also relocation companies. Mm. Because like, for example, there are relocation companies that might have also lawyers inside, but they are now doing a conversation maybe through emails and a spreadsheet and files, right? So also like what we have to understand is that Sweden has a culture of do it on your own. And actually the government itself doesn't, when you have a power of attorney, it not necessarily have to be to a lawyer. It could be to an expert as well. So that's why there are companies like unions or even their own companies, they have a person that is the HR who is responsible to do the permit with the immigrant. And the HR, sometimes they, if I tell you like a horror story, one HR did a mistake and put that the time of the employment was 6 months. And that was just the temporary, like 6 months trial period. And then the person did not get to have an ID for those 6 months because they only got 6 months visa, right? And you need to have it for a year. And then the person could not get paid. It was because if you have your ID, you cannot have your bank account. So everything was a chain of actions that led from that small mistake, mm-hmm. right? But like, if we think about like where the problem lies, it's so much more easier to create the system that supports both sides than actually trying to educate each HR in each company, right? So I think that that is where we're going as the first steps.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, if the immigrant comes already with the knowledge and information in the system, if you know, that's then they can come to HR and they can effectively help each other out in a way.
Exactly.
That's cool. I love it. And this is what's cool to me about talking to you as sort of when you're early on in the journey, because the vision is there. Obviously, it's all about execution, how you get it done, when you can get it done, you know, and adoption. But I think it's just really neat to think about how much opportunity there is in Sweden. And then, of course, you know, you can go to Norway, you can go to Finland, you can go to other countries in the area, et cetera. I'm curious, you know, on the U.S. side, right? Okay, we have a lot of immigration tech companies. It's a big market. At the same time, our government's immigration processes are very, very overwhelmingly manual and paper-based. And it's very frustrating. You know, Canada has a lot more technology. A lot of other countries do. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that on the, you know, I've never immigrated to Sweden. I went once to visit. I actually have family that live in Malmo, but I took the train from Germany. It was very easy, you know, as a US citizen, I guess it was really easy for me to cross. I've never had to deal with immigration really in Sweden. So is it open for, you know, folks like you to come in and collaborate and build technology and make things easier? Or is it sort of really difficult to make that happen?
I think that making technology or being a startup in Sweden is easier than anywhere else that I have lived in, that will be USA and Dominican Republic. And it's basically because Sweden has the platform for doing that. Like from day one, there are places where we can go for free business development advices. We are right now an incubator, and the incubator is certified. So then we get some funds from the incubator to test and validate our product. And I think that all those things is all that structure and all that funding goes into research and also to grow new companies is what's making Sweden like the next Silicon Valley, right? In, like if you think about it, Stockholm has like way more unicorns per capita that after Silicon Valley in the world, and we only 10 million people here. So that's, I think that is something that I'm thankful to, because I think that people have discussions about like how we can develop, how can we research about how this can be solved with AI, for example, like as an expert system, or how can we research about how to manage the data, how we can do new legal ways or legal tech, right? So those kind of things, the whole system is very open. And something that is in student culture is that because of the flat organization, you can call, like I have test CEO of the business region of Gothenburg, and he's like, of course, let's just meet, you know? It's very like easy going to just slide in somebody's DM in LinkedIn, right? So I think that that's something that I'm very thankful for in the sense of immigration. Sweden has lately have a little bit of a bad reputation. And it's not because the system is not easy. It's already digitized in the sense of you do online applications, but it's because of the long time waiting times. So in the European Union, they are trying to do everything in less than 6 months. But then after the immigration crisis in 2015, all the immigration processes just like got delayed. So I think that what we have to understand, and that's part of our, the problem that we're solving, is that imagine that you do an application and you have to wait a year to get an application approved for family, let's say for your partner. It takes a year at least. So if you're doing that process and you did a mistake and you wait 1 year to find out that you did a mistake, then you are angry, not only because you did the mistake, but also because you wait a year for finding that out. So I think that what we're trying to do this is, and if I go now into data, 1 out of 2 applications are rejected because of mistakes that they don't qualify, basically.
50%.
50%.
Wow.
Yes. So if we go now in Sweden, right. So I don't have data outside, that we'll find out later. But if we go now into our software, what we see as what we want to give as a freemium version is that people can check the requirements. Because if they can check the requirements, then they can play with it as well. They can see probabilities. They can see what things they have to focus on to have that ready to be able to do the application. And that's saying that now we are optimizing 50% of the applications just by doing that. Of course, we cannot, liabilities, like we cannot promise 100%, but that's what we are trying to build, right? So then after that, if I go also in companies, for example, something very easy as well to relate to, when COVID was happening, a lot of companies got help from the government as a relief. So now those companies, by law, they cannot apply for work permits because they got support from the government. And all these companies who apply for immigration permits, they just also wasted because they cannot have their employees. But if they knew from the beginning this little fact, they will have saved money and time. So we always are thinking of how do we save people's money, time, frustrations. And that's always our goal. And we are very user-centric. You know, like we listen to what is happening. We listen what things are doing. And I think that it's actually good that I have not been an immigration lawyer. And no offense to anybody. But I think that when I go sometimes with immigration lawyers, they are like, oh, there is no problem. You know, because of course, when you go to the immigration lawyer, they are experts and they hold a lot of information themselves. But then I see the things outside it. right? I see the things of let's twist this and let's change it. Why don't we try to find an easier way or another way? And of course, like sometimes my expectations are unrealistic because I will tell you that in the year that I have been focusing more of this, like actually I went full time only this year and we founded the company in January. So it have been now, we have been going like full time on. I actually did my leap of faith, but I have been having a learning curve into tech because I had an idea was what was AI. That is what we think of in marketing terms. And now I understand what is actually can be done, what cannot be done, what's something that takes more money, what things can be done faster, right? And then kind of like also like my tech lead, Liv Marie, I don't know if she's going to ever see this, but she's very grounding us, me and Abby, because me and Abby talk about future ambition. And she's the tech lead. She's like, okay, but let's start smaller. And that's a great combination in that sense, to be able to understand, okay, this is what we can do first, and this is what we are going towards, and how to solve this in a different way. Let's try this, let's try that, let's try first with a microservice, for example, and if that works, then we build it, right? So that's how we are going and approaching this problem.
I love it. You know, having a team, having a great team where everyone complements one another is so, so important. And you know what, to your point too, it's not about, no offense that you're not an immigration lawyer. I think it's great because every industry needs an outside perspective sometimes. It's not like you're coming in blind. You're going to be working with people who are experts, but the perspective is different. And I think sometimes that's what you need to come in and say, yeah, why don't we try this differently? What if, you know? I've talked to a lot of lawyers and, you know, I practice myself and I still have a different lens, a different point of view. Sometimes I talk to immigration law partners and I'll really dig in and I'll ask them, well, why? Why do you do it this way? And you'd be surprised how many times I get the answer, I don't know. I guess we just always did it this way and I never thought about it, right? So it does take sometimes someone else to come in from the outside and shake things up a little bit.
Yes. And that's the point. Let's shake the world.
Let's literally shake the world. I mean, right? Somebody sharing the cultural and societal parts too, societal infusion with and for immigrants. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, bringing immigrants in is not just good for the economy, but it's great for, I mean, listen, I love all the food in New York City. It would never be possible without all of the amazing people coming from their home country and literally sharing their cuisines, right?
Yes.
Abhi Lass, your co-founder, says the human aspect of immigration is something that can be easily ignored unintentionally. Agreed. And that's why a lot of immigration lawyers focus on, they use, even in their marketing, they use words like empathy, they use words like understanding and caring, and not just, you know, visa this or, you know, solutions that, right? It's showing that along the way, we'll care for you and care about you.
I want to add about this because it's something that we have also like going back and forth as a startup. And it's because we want to be very tech oriented, right? And we want to be automate everything and use chatbots and so on. And sometimes people is just like, I just want somebody to talk with. So we have to balance that out. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to balance the part of there are people who would like to are okay doing a chatbot, but there are people who wants to talk with somebody. And that's okay. That's okay to be able to enable both people to work in the same place. So Emigrate is a one-stop shop. So then you don't have to go anywhere else. If you want to talk with the lawyer, you talk to the lawyer through a platform. If you want to just do it with the platform, you are welcome to do it. It's very ambitious in terms of the amount of work that it needs to be done for it. But I believe that I have found my passion, you know, and I believe that, and as you as well, you feel for this and you love this. So when you find this, then it's like, okay, this is the challenge. Then it might be down the road, but that's the goal. So we want to do one-stop shop, but we don't want to do one fits all. What we want to enable is that people can make choices inside the same platform and they can get a, if they had to pay, they will have to pay more to talk with a person, sadly, because it's the reality. A person holds more value than the machine in their hourly spend. But we want to be able to enable that as well. So I just want to add it on because I think that the human aspect, a lot of people ask us like, oh, you're only going to build for 18 years old to 30 years old. You know, those are the ones who are going to be using your platform. So you have to be focusing on students or early professionals. I was like, not really. The 40-year-old maybe will be wanted to, that we do it through the platform, but he wants somebody else to do it, right? So then is everything, he's going to pay more because he wants everything done. And the young person are going to be like, I'm going to do it with the platform, so I'm going to do it myself. So that's the aim.
Yeah, it's great. And you give people a choice. And really, that to me is access to justice and access to immigration. You give people who have the means, the ability to use it. You have people who have less. You give people who have less means an alternative that's better than having zero guidance, but is still accessible and affordable and things like that. I'm curious, you know, I know it's still early on, but I'm kind of also curious. I mean, I'm sure there have been a ton, but are there any memorable maybe challenges or difficulties? And I know every day is almost a difficulty and a difficult challenge, but I'm curious because it sounds like there's, you know, there's always the learning and things, but that overall it's just been up and learning and learning and building. I'm wondering if any like challenges come to mind. And I say this also because, you know, for the audience, for people listening, for myself too, you learn from other people's mistakes much more so than you learn from other people's successes. And this is a cliche, but it's very true, I think. So I'm curious if you had anything, any experiences like that, that, you know, you can share that we can all learn from.
I think there are a lot of experiences that we have learned. One of them will be try to always get somebody who knows more about this kind of topics or somebody who had experience, for example, building software early on. Because we spend a lot of time trying to figure things out on our own. And then when we have, for example, Liv come in, she was like, okay, we have to get a structure. You know, the same thing happened in the incubator. Like, let's get a structure. Let's do a step one, a step two. Because, of course, you can learn a lot of things about entrepreneurship online. But sometimes you just need, like, what steps you are missing, right? That you need to have a roadmap or that you need to have a user to be able to build for that user, right? Especially when you're having a problem that can be for a lot of people. And also, I think that another learning experience that I will say is that I think that this everybody says it, but you have to try with the users right away because we spend a lot of time building on our own. And of course, we were not doing it full time. We were just part-timing it, but we were doing investigation of our own, and we were like a lot of like assumptions. And then when we start just working with the clients, then we realize, okay, this is easier. Oh, we can do a template here. Oh, this is happening, you know? So we can do a blog, we can do this. So as soon as you get to the people, do a sprint, get to people, pivot. I think that it's okay to pivot. I think that we sometimes marry to some ideas and it's hard to let them go sometimes. But I think that it's better to fail earlier than later on the road. So I think that that's the best recommendation. I think that a big challenge in immigration tech is the changing rules in the government, because those things we have to adapt to them. We cannot really change them. We want, of course, in the long term that we can have some information to say like, look, this is not working, but we are not that scale at the moment. But I think that, for example, like this summer, there were some changing rules that sometimes affect the migrants as well. And sadly, those things, we just have to adapt to it. We cannot do anything about it. So I think that we just have to be okay with that. And we do two timelines, right? We do a timeline working with the governments who take like 5 years to do a lot of things. And then we have our timeline as a startup where we change, pivot, adapt, going around the corners and figure things out. And I think that right now where we are, we have been bootstrapping to now, and we are now raising funds and we started that due diligence. We were part of an amazing accelerator called Unconventional Ventures that was for underrepresented founders. And in USA, as a partner was Backstage Capital with Arlan Halmington and Unconventional Ventures. We have two amazing women, that is Thea and Nora, running it, and they were really on point. They give us like education, but also they were talking directly into what it is to be a person of color or even a woman trying to raise funds. And because I love Sweden and their data, so if you are a woman founder, like only women's in the founding team, you only have 1% of the capital that is raised. If you are a mixed team, women and males, then you have 13%. So it's a big gap that still we have to encounter and then raise awareness about it and just have the discussion, because still there is a gap into raising funds as a female startup, a CEO, to be able to say to people, just believe in my idea. For example, you will believe in it because you have experience with it and then you understand it. But sometimes I would never forget that I went to a full jury and they were all like males over 50 and then nothing with male over 50. But then I asked, have you ever lived abroad? And then everybody was like, nothing. And then my whole pitch fell through because they couldn't relate. They have never lived abroad. They have traveled abroad, but they have never lived abroad. So they could not relate to the problem. So this is why when we see funders, we want to actually like engage people who have lived this, you know, who understand that this is a challenge and this could have a solution. And we are still like, of course, we are like seeing different ways. But I think that what I see is that if we get some fundings, then we're going to accelerate the process. If we don't get fundings, we're just going to continue bootstrapping and slower. It might take longer time, but we're going to continue with the mission.
That's super exciting. And that's really inspirational too. Yeah, it's the discussion about founders who are minorities, who are women, whether it's an all-woman founding team or at least in mixed. I mean, the statistics are there. I mean, it's the case. And so I really love, you know, shout out to Unconventional Ventures, shout out to Backstage Capital for doing really good work and putting, you know, giving you the ability and giving so many other cool companies the ability to compete, right? To like get the funding and not to be there and just say, I don't understand, therefore I won't invest. So that's super cool. Thank you for sharing that. You know, I always kind of, I think we have an idea of, I usually ask like, okay, well, what's next for the company? But I think everything is next. So I think we have a really great idea. And it sounds like you're currently raising money already. So that's really exciting. You know, my kind of last question to you would be, you know, from the listeners who, you know, tend to be immigration lawyers or professionals or other immigration tech founders, where can they get maybe more information about you and the company? And also, you know, what do you need? Do you need people to sign up? Do you need Swedish immigration lawyers to come and check out the platform? What would be good for you as a really early stage company to get out of this industry?
Yeah, so right now we are doing second language, English. So anybody that is either company, immigration lawyers or location companies who would like to come in and then just test this out as a mold, you know, as something that we are building together, that is something that I'm calling to. And also immigration, even clients as well, that they are like, they don't know who to find, I will call for that. If you are also an immigration lawyer in USA, let's say, that's okay as well, as long as we can keep in contact. And then we see, okay, now maybe because the person was here in Sweden, now they want to move to USA. So let's do that change, that connection when it comes. But just to have that connection and what we did, classical startup, we have not focused so much on the website because we only have Liv as a tech developer and she's falling on in the product. But the website is quite scratched. But this week we were like, just in case, we're going to just put something there. So we have changed it to individual companies and service providers. So if you are an individual moving to Sweden or want to move to Sweden, you go there. If you are a company, you go to your company. And then if you're a service provider, you go there. So then it's just like we can keep in touch and just go from there.
That's awesome. And just so people know, the website is emigrate.co. which is emigrate.co. So just for folks to come and check it out. And there it is. So, well, I always like to end kind of on a, if I can, on either a fun or inspirational. You gave us so much to be inspired about. And I really love everything that you and your team are working on. So on a fun note, I'm curious, when you lived in the US, because I'm from New York, and I know you lived in multiple places, and I will not take any offense to this, but what was your favorite city when you were living here?
I actually have been in New York because I have family there, but I do love Tahoe. I'm a Tahoe fan completely. because even if it's a little people, I am not a big fan of big cities anymore, but I like the nature. I like to be able to just go hiking, and that I also have found here. So I'm a Tahoe fan. I do also like San Francisco. So I'm a West Coast. I'm sorry.
You know what? If this wasn't my show, I'd maybe be angry, but yeah. I love the West Coast too. So I totally understand it. Trust me.
I would like to come back here in a year. So I think that then we can have what happened in this year. Exactly. I think that would be fun.
Exactly. Yeah. Give New York City another chance. I promise. It's a great place. Awesome. Yes. Well, Annalie, thank you so much. This was really fun. And I really am so happy to hear about everything you're doing, learn about your story, and obviously learn more about Emigrate. I hope folks go check it out, whether you're in Sweden or you're maybe leaving Sweden or you have nothing to do with Sweden, check out Emigrate. And, you know, I guess folks can reach out to you on LinkedIn and learn more. So thank you, Annalie. Appreciate you again joining so late. I hope it's not.
No, it's perfectly fine.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, Roman.
Awesome. I love it. I wish I knew how to say, I think I learned a few Swedish words previously when I visited once, but I don't remember anything. So I would have said goodbye in Swedish, but I forgot. In any case, thank you all for joining. Thanks so much to Annalie's family and friends and everyone who came. It's super fun. I love seeing all these comments and everyone else who was able to watch. Again, connect with Annalie on LinkedIn. Check out Emigrate. I love having a combination of really kind of mature and sometimes even exited companies. And then, of course, seeing folks that are really early on, that's really, really fun for me because we've all been there. Every company, you know, Laborless is still growing. And even companies that have been around the immigration space for 20 years, we're small and we're starting out at some point. So it's always a great reminder of all the awesome people doing things in the immigration tech space. Thank you all so much for joining. I'll see you next week for another episode with another great guest. And in the meantime, stay safe, have a wonderful weekend, and peace out.